This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
New conversations on Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
All right, let's get into this conversation with Dr. Cindy Wemahona, who is a writer, storyteller, and motivational speaker. She's written quite a lot of books, but her writings tell of an impoverished childhood in South Africa and her personal and political struggles as a black woman living under apartheid. And we'll unpack her history before we get into, where she's going and the present as well. Dr. Mahona, good evening. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening, and thank you so much for having me.
So you obtained your matric via correspondence. Please share that with us and what your life was like when you achieved your matric.
Oh, my golly. Well, let's start off by saying I did have a teacher certificate.
Okay.
When I left school, I had done what was called junior certificate, which is halfway up, you know, high school, mm-hmm. and then a two-year teacher training course. And I had a certificate for that, which meant I could teach. That was the course that was available only to black South Africans. People classified other, like Indian, colored, white, had to have a matriculation, you know, certificate before they could go for teacher training. Hmm. But we were a separate category. So I was a primary school teacher, but then fell on hard times. By age 23, I was expecting my third child, husband had run away, and as a non-citizen, because as blacks, we were not citizens until 1990, or just before 1994, when change came. So I couldn't apply for any government help. If you're not a citizen, you're not entitled to help, you know, to any kind of aid from the government that has denied you citizenship. And then because I had this, teacher certificate, I tried to get jobs. I couldn't because officially I was married. And married women of all colors were last to hire, first to hire, you know, last to hire, first to fire. So I struggled. Then I did domestic work and I did scrubbing sheep heads and frying fed cook before it got to be, you know, the in thing. And I at some point I got so desperate. I went to a butcher shop in Guguletu and fell on my knees. I'm pregnant with the baby, the last baby, and wept before this gentleman. And he knew I was a teacher. He said, "You can't do that." I said, "I have to. I've come here to beg you. I beg you. I don't have a cent. I have the children, and my mother is away. I'm left with my younger siblings. There is no food. Do you want me to be?" I said, "I don't want you to give me something to eat. I'm here to say, give me 5 sheep heads. I don't have a cent. I will scrub them and sell them, and then I will give you the money and borrow more." And this guy trusted me. To his dying day, he used to, you know, when he was lecturing his own offspring, he would point out to me and say, "You can't say anything about struggling. Look at Cindy Wemahona and how she pulled herself from the mud. I know because she came to me." You know, I knew the wife. She had been a teacher, a little bit senior to me. But I went to them because I didn't know what else to do. When you're desperate, you forget to be shy. You forget to be ashamed, because what is the alternative? But the lesson here is that for anyone, anyway, it doesn't matter how dire your situation, help is available. Swallow your pride. Say to hell with shame, a sense of shame. Go to someone you trust and say, "I need help."
Hmm. So, you know, Dr. Makona, I then wonder, just from what you have said to us and what you've narrated about your life and how you, you know, at some point had to beg for work or to be able to make money, where did your love for writing and storytelling then come from? Yes, you were a teacher or you had the certificate, but where did it come from? Where did it all start for Dr. Makona?
The writing is still a surprise to me because, you know, I never had such a dream. When I was growing up, there were no women who looked like me who were known as authors and writers and storytellers. No. No. Mm-hmm. History denied us that. When I look back now, throughout my, you know, childhood, the only book I ever held in my hand written by a black woman, a Xhosa woman, was a short story book by a Miss or Mrs. Dana somewhere in there. But even that wasn't remarkable because the teachers didn't make anything of it. Either they didn't know or it wasn't remarkable to them. But you look back and say there were no Xhosa women writers or women writers who were black and not citizens in South Africa then. How come nobody made a song and dance about this? But you know, when you are oppressed, maybe that's not a priority. So I didn't have any role models to follow. My storytelling comes from listening to stories when I was a child, and then reading books when I got better at it. And loving, you know, language, loving words. I love storytelling. If I could just, you know, storytell, I doubt I would write. But at some point, I was persuaded and guided and nudged into writing. I didn't think I could do it. But more and more people, you should write that. You should write that until in the end, I realized, you know, you sit down and you take stock. Mm. You read other books. And, you know, a lot of us, some have written, some haven't started. You read the book and you think, I could have written this. I could have written a better book. But sit down and write it. You know, sit down and write it. That's what I tell people when they ask me, how do you start? I say, you sit down and you write. Nobody, you know, knows. At the beginning, you have a story, but by the end, the story isn't really what you thought about it. You don't know the story until you write it. If anybody asked me now to rewrite any of my books, you think I could do it? No. No. Books get written by being written. You sit down, you may have the first sentence, you may have the idea, but you can never have every word you're going to write down there. You don't know.
Mm. For you, when you start to write a book, Dr. Makona, what is your process?
My book, my latest book is almost a year now. It came out last July, July last year. The book of essays, I write the yawning void. And these essays, I deal even with that. How I write, why I write, why I started writing. My writing really mostly is not inspired. It is provoked out of me. Something makes me angry. Something makes me sad. And because I don't have the courage or the platform to stand at the mountaintop and yell at my nation, I write. In one of these essays, I do point out that if there had never been the scourge of AIDS, I doubt I would ever have been, you know, driven to sitting down and writing. Mm. But AIDS, as I perceived it then, I've had some revisions since, because things changed, was just, for me, so mind-boggling. I couldn't understand how you could kill someone by being careless or even deliberately, as the stories that were coming out of South Africa, I was away from the country then, were coming. There would be a story about how someone who knew they were positive went about infecting other people. That was mind-boggling to me. I couldn't understand how anyone could look at someone else and say, I love you, and then go ahead and kill them. I still don't. I mean, there is gender-based violence to this day. It's not only through AIDS. I see it, you know, this man killed the husband, the wife killed the boyfriend. I don't understand. There are other ways of dealing with anger, of dealing with grief, of dealing with this. No one, you don't have to kill. There is nothing on earth that justifies murder. And that's why I write.
And that is why you write. I definitely love that indeed, Dr. Makona. So would you then say that you write to challenge and influence public opinion while empowering the young woman, the young person in the country? Dr. Makona? Dr. Makona, are you still there? All right, it seems we have lost our connection to Dr. Sindiwe Makona, who is a writer, storyteller, and motivational speaker, trying to just, of course, unpack her love for writing. And she tells us why she writes, which is very important. The why is always very important. We'll reestablish our connection with Dr. Makona. It is 9:30. Questions, comments that you may have for her, 0861-987-000.
Power Zone on Power 98.7.
We have a book review. Listen to the title, Indoda Must Cry, written by author and life coach Brian Sirumula. But also it comes to individual choices to do better.
It takes you rather as an individual to be willing to learn, to admit that I cannot continue hating people like this. It's choices that you need to make as an individual, that I need to better myself. I need to be able to be a better person in the community. Where do I find help? How can I find help? When you start asking such questions, then you are on a pathway to making better decisions that will benefit not only yourself, but the community at large.
Power Zone, 12 to 3 a.m. on Power 98.7, 8 p.m. to midnight. This is Power Perspective on Power 98.7.
All right, let us continue our conversation with Dr. Sindiwe Makona. We've re-established that connection to her. So, Dr. Makona, I was asking you, you know, do you think that your writing challenges and influences public opinion while you also empower the young black woman in the country?
What do you mean by public opinion?
Do you think
you mean the general population?
Yes.
Those people who read. Unfortunately, writing can only have impact on people who read. I say unfortunately because we are not, as a nation, great at reading. Mm-hmm. We are not readers. And this, to me, is mind-boggling. Because if not all, most of the problems that confront us, that are troubling us, that makes us sad and want to weep, because we don't do storytelling effectively, we don't have an hour of let's do nothing but storytelling for all the children and young people and old people. We are, as a nation, facing disaster after disaster after disaster. And yet, our reaction does not demonstrate this. Reading should be a priority. And reading is really crucial if our children, especially, are ever going to hope to thrive. Where children do not read, they do not thrive. Look at the reading stats and the stats of who thrives in South Africa. You can see how the two intertwine, how they merge. The children who come from the population groups where there is reading at home, they thrive. The 1 or 2% or 3% is a small percentage of children in this country that do thrive. When you break down into skin color, language color, culture, you will see the children who come from the homes of parents who are better educated, who are better at reading, children who do not read. And reading is not only book reading. The child reads in the mommy's tummy. The child reads through the eye, through the ear. It is opening the world to the child, her world. And you get children who are 5 and 7 and go to school. And if you point here in Cape Town at Table Mountain, or you say, where's Table Mountain? They have no idea what you're talking about. No 4-year-old who grows around a space in this country where there is water, sea or river or whatever, should be unable to swim. That's the world. That is their world. The country you are going to ask them to vote for when they are 18 and they don't know it. And we expect them to thrive.
And I then wonder, you know, as you speak about the young person, especially young children being able to read, for you ideally as an author, what would you like, or what would you suggest that at what age rather should people start reading, Dr. Makona?
When the child, when you're aware you're carrying a human being in your tummy, mama, read to that child, talk to that child, sing to that child. Science tells us now that that's when they start to collect the vocabulary. Before they are born, read to the newborn, sing to them, talk to them. Children read. If the parents read, I have a book you asked that I should be publishing before long. I'm doing the, it's done. I'm getting someone to illustrate it.
Beautiful.
The title is something like, How Do Children Become Enthusiastic Readers? Raising Readers is the title. Raising Readers. If it were up to me, you know, reading is a business. Books are, you know, you get them, you give them to a publisher, then it gets to, if it were just up to me, and someone at Arts and Culture or someone who cares about this country, I would give it out for free, provided it got translated into all the languages in this country and was used, given to all the parents with children and the grandparents. Read, 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 because it informs the parents and the grandparents and all the caregivers. The best gift to this young person from before they are born until they reach 18 and do it on their own. By that time, they are, if you have been doing it, they will do it. Read to them the best birthday present from one to wherever. Don't give any party, don't give any presents, and you forget to include a book. Make books look interesting and important to children. Always include a book in your package of gifts so that they become aware, because they see the book all the time. Let's love books as grown-ups. Our children will love books. They get it from us. They can get it from no one else. The teachers can't do that. How much time does a teacher have to get the child to be enthusiastic about reading? Half an hour a day, an hour? It's your job at home. Parents, mama, tata, grandpa, grandma, auntie, oh, it doesn't matter who you are. If you are a grown-up who has children around you, tell them stories, read to them. You don't have to be a writer. A newspaper, a magazine, anything. It is reading. Read, you know, from whatever you buy, the recipe, you know, outside, you know, the milk jar. Read. Read the instructions. What is, they must be interested in the word. Written, scribbled, it doesn't matter.
And, you know, I, like you say, you know, reading to children is very important, but those are not the only kind of books that you write, right, Dr. Makona?
No, I write books for everyone. From children to grown-ups, because, you know, I mean, we all need to be excited about something. And people my age and older, there's very few older than me. But at my age, I get excited about books. I read books for children. I read books for young adults. I read books for anybody. If the book is exciting, I want to read it.
I then wonder, Dr. Makona, before we take calls, how are you able to get it right with each book that you write, whether it's for children, whether it's for young women or, you know, young adults, whether it's for the older generation? How do you get it right and are able to, in inverted commas, separate yourself from and knowing who your target audience is for that particular book?
Respect for the, you know, prospective reader. Write for someone you love. Even if you don't have a face, pretend you know. Or write to some, like if I'm writing for a preteen, I have grandchildren or grandnieces, grandnephews. I have them in front of me in my mind. I write with that. The outpouring is for them. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not writing for that boy or that girl specifically, but I'm writing for that age group.
Okay. You actually look at your age group so that you are
look
able to understand.
Mm-hmm. You know, now you have Google. Find out what they need, where they are, you know, what their interests are, and then target that age group.
Mm-hmm.
Even learn their language. There are books now that, you know, people, you know, different ages use different words for the same thing. You know, find yes. little things that they can connect. You know, when they read your book, it sounds real to them because it speaks as they speak. Use their language.
Right. We are in conversation with Dr. Sindiwe Makona, who is a writer, storyteller, motivational speaker, educator, and we'll find out from her which one gives her the most happiness of all that she does. Kevin in Lotus Garden, good evening.
Good evening, ma'am, and how are you?
Very well, and yourself, Kevin?
And I can bet that you love teaching more than anything else. But anyway, be that as it may, I wanted to ask a question in this way, because I literally say that we are surrounded by dumb kids with smartphones, with an prospect of not wanting to read it, or even if you go to the library, it's a mess. It's really a mess. So people like the panel there, these are the people that we need to continuously engage with so that we can at least have a standing fight against the growing fast AI, mm-hmm. which is making us dumb and dumber.
Mm-hmm. All right, so do you have a question for Dr. Makona?
I couldn't hear the question.
It's not a question.
The volume is low for some reason.
There isn't a question yet, Dr. Makona. We just lost Kevin, actually. But Dr. Makona, you know, he was just saying that there is a concern that he has, you know, when it comes to AI and the issue of the future of literature and AI and what that could possibly look like, where we are getting young people not too interested in reading. We've got Kevin back. Kevin, can you just maybe speak closer to your mouthpiece?
Is it better now, man?
That sounds somewhat better.
Okay, I'm not sure if I'm going to say the exact thing I said. It just came out of nowhere. But what I was trying to say is that you have to say that we are surrounded by dumb kids with smartphones.
Okay.
Even if you go to the library, the way it is such a mess that to find a youth kind of a particular person doing the actual reading, even in the street, it's really difficult nowadays.
Mm.
So people like the person we have in your panel right there, yeah, certainly give us a fighting chance against this AI that is making us lazy and dumber.
Oh, all right, Kevin. Thank you so much. Kevin in Lotus Garden there. So, Dr. Makona, you know, he was just saying that, you know, people like yourself, you really you make the future look bright where you've got young...
They go back to the home. The mm-hmm. kids don't buy the gadgets for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's the parents who must set the guidelines. If the parents want them to have gadgets, then there's nothing you can do. They will have the gadgets. But if parents are not well informed, they will not. Parents can only guide starting from where they are themselves. Our parents are not reading. That's why even mother tongue is suffering. If the parents don't guide the young can only go, you know, with what guidance they get from the generation parenting them. In China, for instance, yeah. I read somewhere, right now, kids are not allowed to have more than, I think, half an hour a day with. But you don't want to lay the law like that, because then there's another name for that. But parents must be guided to guide differently. Who is going to do the guiding? I mean, my little book might help, but it will only help those parents who get to hear of it and are interested enough to reach out for it. You know, I have a website, Magona Media, where you can read about my books.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, books need the education department, social services, I don't know, to help promote. You know, as I said, with this book I'm finishing, you know, raising readers, I really would give it up for free. If it could be promised to be digitized and get into, you know, the clinics where expectant mothers go once a month, I think, or so that while they are being, they can also be learning about this precious, you know, role they are playing to the education of the child they are carrying. Start now. Start now, mama. Read to the child. Talk to the child. Sing to the child. Converse with your child. Guide your child. It's never too early to start.
Never too early to start, indeed. Let's take another call, Dr. Magona. Eleanor in Western Area, good evening.
Good evening. I just wanted to take this moment to really appreciate the work that Dr. Sindiwe has done over the years. I stumbled upon
Thank
one
you.
Of her books, and for the first time, the dynamics of a young Black woman and her relationships and her friendships were described so beautifully in Beauty's Gift. It's a call to action for Black women. This was so many years ago when HIV was still a mysterious disease. And somehow, even today, when I read it, I was blown away. I was blown away. I feel like these are conversations that we are not having. Not only that, but I think so much of the time, the media that we consume, the books that are out there, they don't reflect the daily lives of Black South African women. Irrespective of what economic group these women come from, they all have the same enemy in common. And I've read a few of her other books as well, where she just describes the life of a Black woman so beautifully. I think a lot of us now, you know, if you are about my age, 30 years old, we have the opportunity to grow into different careers and, you know, set the tune for our lives. But many women before us, just one generation before us, did not have that option. You would either tend as a nanny or work as a help in a white household. And I love that she tells those stories, because I feel like those are stories that we should know. In order for us to appreciate the freedom that we have today, we ought to know that where do we come from? And the women before us, the women that have raised us, where do they come from? And I think it will help us foster better relationships as Black women. But most importantly, I love that she tells the story of a Black woman across all the economic groups. And I appreciate her work so, so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eleanor.
Oh, Eleanor. I wish I could see you, touch you. Let's get in touch somehow. You can find me. You know, I'm very easy to find. Facebook, Sindiwe Magona. Please, let's get in touch.
Okay.
I love people. I'm grateful to people who, you know, people who say, I write, because when I read your book for the first time, I thought, and not that this book, I love reading this book, but she's talking about something. This is my mother's life. There are people who write and they tell me they write because I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's the highest compliment any writer can be paid.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you, Eleanor. Eleanor in Western Area. And I do know, Dr. Magona, that you are an author. You're, of course, a speaker, motivational speaker. You are a storyteller, of course, through your books. You're also an educator. Which do you love more? Which one do you find most fulfilling?
That's a hard question to answer. You know, it depends on what I'm doing. Like now I have about 20, 25 pages to the end of this book. So right now, you wouldn't drag me to anything because, this is like a mother who has an expectant mother counting days or hours to the birth of a child. I am that excited about this book. You know, Raising Readers is ready to send out. There's another book I'm doing. It's a novel for young teens, for teens. It's called, Girl Opens Eyes. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with the one of our disaster teenage pregnancies. That's where I have about 20, 25 pages to the end. And I'm very, but when I'm doing storytelling, I don't want that to stop. You know, when a storytelling, they say it's over 2 days or 3 days. When it gets to the end, mostly I'm crying more than the children because I don't want it to stop.
And, it really does sound like you thoroughly enjoy writing. And we are so glad that we've got writers like you in the country, Dr. Magona. And, the issue, of course, of the career that you've had, and this is another difficult question, I guess, that I'm going to be asking you. What the accomplishments that you see, the achievements that you've had, the successes that you've had in your career, which of those are you most proud of?
Oh, that's another hard question. I've had honorary doctorates from numerous universities abroad and here. But last year, I had the conference at the Georgia State University, a Cindy Wemagona Literary Conference, something like that. I mean, a conference on my work.
Mm-hmm.
That was for me like huge. And then I came back. And then in September, 29 September, AMAZWI, the Museum of Literature in Makanda, mm-hmm. former Grahamstown, opened an exhibition, a year-long exhibition of my work. The whole of the second floor of that establishment is covered with my work. I mean, this is mind-blowing to me. You can also get it online. You can visit them, AMAZWI, AMAZWI. You can see the work online. I mean, I have really been highly, highly honored.
Mm.
And then, mm-hmm. When I got there at the opening, the doors that are the revolving doors in glass, all are plastered with pictures of me, and written under my name is Cindy Wemagona, a conscience for the nation.
Sure.
A conscience for the nation. I mean, the fact that my work, written, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, every one of my books is still alive. I didn't know that books died until I started writing. And then you would want to print, that's out of print. All my books are still in print. I am grateful. Grateful to the powers that be.
And let's then speak about one of those books, right? When the Village Sleeps. What inspired you to write that particular book and that particular title as well?
So that title is a little twist on a saying, a closer saying. No, it's not actually closer, it's actually African. It's throughout the continent. It takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a South African until I went to the U.S. and I found that Africans from North Africa to everybody knows this thing. It takes a village to raise a child. the question I ask in this novel is, what happens then when the village slips?
Hmm.
Because that's what has happened in my country, your country. Village South Africa is not only fast asleep, it is snoring.
Sure.
It means that the grown-ups, the generation that should be guiding the upcoming generation, is failing to do its duty. That's why, you know, the book I was telling you about that I'm finishing over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
Girl Opens Eyes. That's why we have this teenage problem, where 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds are giving birth to children. In my mother's generation, that was almost unheard of. In my generation, it was still something, you got expelled from school. I'm not saying it was right to be expelled. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying it was such an occurrence that didn't happen, was not frequent. By the time I was getting children, it was becoming more. I was seeing teenagers, you know, I was in my 20s, early 20s, but I was getting 16, 14-year-olds. Hmm. Now it's rampant. Hmm. Because like everything else, a habit, you know, multiplies. Because, you know, unthinkingly, we role model good and bad. Hmm. Role modeling is not always conscious. You don't always know or are aware that you are role modeling. But when things happen, they will happen more and more frequently. That's where we are with teen pregnancy. How do we reverse that? Never mind, stop it. But we need to interrupt that. Because it is something none of us is proud of. It is something that does harm to the children born of parents who are hardly parents because they are children themselves. A child needs parents who are ready and prepared to parent. At 14, there's no way you're going to be prepared to parent.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. And so what then can we expect? You know, you spoke about two books that you're busy working on. You've got Girl Opens Eyes and Raising Readers.
Yeah.
What can we, let's start with Raising Readers. What can we expect from Raising Readers?
Raising Readers, hopefully, will make every area in the country sparkle. Parents who thought they could not nurture readers, be encouraged to nurture readers. Doesn't matter if you can't read. Pretend you're reading. The 2-month-old doesn't know you didn't go to school. Doesn't know you cannot read. Read the book even if it's upside down, but get the child to get the impression you are reading and enjoy it. You know, dance around. Let's forget to be always observing decorum. Mm. Children don't need decorum. Children need joy, laughter. Roll yourself on the ground. Cry, weep when something makes you weep from the book. They need all this displayed. Because it is natural. It is natural to cry when you're sad. It is natural to laugh when you're happy. They must see this so that they can learn to unbundle themselves like you are doing.
Mm.
This is a book I hope our churches, our schools, and all organizations can embrace. Because that's where the parents are. I don't know why. We think books belong to schools only. Books belong to all grown-ups so that they can then give over the joy of reading to the children they are raising, to the grandchildren, to the nieces and nephews, and even to children they do not know. When you are a grown-up in a bus or train and you are reading, the children around you may not know who you are, but they see what you do. They will emulate it.
Hmm. And then what would you like for people to take from Girl Opens Eyes?
Girl Opens Eyes is for girls and boys to know that their lives are up to them, that they are a gift to the nation, to the world, and their maker designed them perfect. When you are born with everything you need to become the best you can be. And it is up to you.
Absolutely.
And the choices you make. And even when you misstep, there will be, you know, errors along the way. Don't give up on it. Never give up on yourself. Never, ever give. You know, because that's what your maker expects from you. Be the best to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. That's all we need to do. With the powers in us, can you imagine if every child is growing up believing in their own importance, their power that is God-given? We are designed by the best designer who made everything we know, including us. Mm. We were born perfect, very strong. Science tells us now we hardly use 1% of something. It's amazing. Google, what percent of our capacity do we use as human beings? You will weep.
Hmm.
That's why, you know, last year when I was 80, I graduated my PhD.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. What a great achievement.
Yeah, because I realized I haven't died yet. Therefore, I can do as long as you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Dare to be whatever.
At the age of 80, graduating with your PhD at the age
Why
of
not?
80.
Why
Amazing.
Not? Why
Very
not?
Very inspirational indeed. Dr. Makona, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you a bit better and to hear from you as well, and the life lessons that you have also imparted onto us as the Power 98.7 family. Thank you so much for
Thank you.
Your
what
time.
You do, making us be alive with you, is reading. And we need that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sindiwe Makona there. And as you heard, at the age of 80, she graduated in her PhD last year. Of course, you can follow her on Instagram, Dr_Sindiwe Makona. The website for all the books, if you haven't seen her books as yet, you'd like to read some of her books, it's Makona Media. That Makona is Magona, makonamedia.co.za. And on Facebook, it is Sindiwe Makona. Just a quick recap, Instagram, Dr_Sindiwe_Makona. It is makonamedia.co.za. That is the website. And on Facebook, she is Sindiwe Makona. What a pleasure speaking to her. You know, I've always said, kibata that red gown. So, Alabon, I can wait all the way until I get to 80 to get it.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.